Visa wants to know where you would like to be. Whether you're a super fan or just in it to win your league, Visa knows we want to spend less time standing in line and more time pursuing our passions. That's why for over 60 years, Visa's been adding innovative plays to the way we pay. From tapping to pay to getting paid in 30 minutes or less, they're giving businesses and consumers more tools to do just that. They know that every Visa transaction is a promise. Whether it's a street vendor in front of a stadium or picking up the latest NFL gear online, Visa wants to provide us with the most secure and easy payment experience possible so everyone, everywhere, can get to where they'd like to be. Visa, everywhere you want to be.
Hey, y'all, Uncle Jimmy here. When you speak for yourself, you're forced to think for yourself. And when you think for yourself, the sports world looks different. In order to enjoy this podcast and this show, you need to have the courage to look at the world from alternative points of view and not be offended when you disagree. Speak for Yourself isn't your Twitter, Facebook, or Instagram feed. SFY tells you what you need to hear and not what you want to hear. So, welcome aboard, buckle up, and enjoy the ride.
We start with the Cowboys. All right, never forget, Jerry Jones is more businessman than football man. He was rich before buying the Cowboys, and his stewardship of America's team has made him spectacularly wealthy. This week, ahead of Dallas's critical NFC East showdown with the Philadelphia Eagles, Jerry flexed his business savvy yet again when talking about injured quarterback Dak Prescott.
You like for everybody to be out there practicing, but I'm totally convinced that he'll be in top form, and we've got to have him in top form, and he will be in top form. I think the situation has been described accurately. These are things that guys play with and they practice with, so I think we're in good shape. I feel good about him Sunday.
All right, when I first heard that quote, I thought Jerry was putting pressure on Prescott. Mm. I thought we were moving dangerously toward a situation resembling the subtle pressure placed on Kevin Durant to play in last year's NBA Finals. We know how that ended. But the more I thought about Jerry's comments, the more I believe they're not about pressuring Dak to play against the Eagles. Dak is going to play. That's a non-issue. Jerry's comments are about contract leverage. The season-long Dak negotiations continue. Jerry has no interest in a media narrative that paints Dak as Willis Reed playing on one leg and leading the Knicks to a championship. That narrative leads to Dak seeking a contract in the Russell Wilson neighborhood of $35 million a year or more. Jerry is setting expectations and trying to control the narrative. By saying he's not worried about Dak, Jerry is saying the injury is no big deal and Dak has no excuses for poor play. This is football 101. I remember being a high school sophomore and injuring my shoulder early in the game. I remember coming to the sideline and thinking, oh, I don't have to play as well the rest of the game. Before I could complete the thought inside my head, my offensive line coach Lee Dilk was in my face shouting, when you go back out there, no excuses. You better play like you were never injured. I was like, damn, how did he know what I was thinking? Jerry knows what Dak and his agent Todd France are thinking. They're thinking about money, and so is Jerry. Dak is under nearly the same level of pressure as head coach Jason Garrett. The only thing that's going to impress Jerry is postseason success. Beating a bad Eagles team with a bum shoulder won't impress Jerry Jones. I like Jerry's mentality and approach. All right, joining the desk now are Fox Sports NFL analyst LeVar Arrington and Hall of Famer and GOAT candidate Eric Dickerson. Mm. All right, Marcellus, I'll start with you. Like Jerry Jones' approach with Dak?
No, I don't like it. And if I'm Dak, I'm agitated. I don't feel pressure. I'm just agitated. Let's take us going back to grade school, junior high, whatever it may be, and Whitlock walks in, little baby Whitlock, and somebody says, you okay? You're like, yeah, I'm good today. And then the next homie come up, you okay? Yeah, all right. Then the next homie come up, you okay? And you're like, damn, dog, yeah, I'm okay. What's wrong with y'all? Then he's like, I told you you wasn't okay. This is what's happening in Dallas. He just, Dak's like, dog, how you gonna tell me how to play with my shoulder and I'm already 100% motivated, so why are you trying to pour on to what my motivation is? And here's the answer. Because Jerry has more than one scoreboard. You would think an owner will only care about his team, his personnel, and getting the most out of them. Mm-hmm. If you really care about Dak Prescott and his shoulder and him playing up to top form, that's a private conversation. But for you to play this out in public means, guess what? You care about the court of public opinion as much as you do about your starting quarterback. So this is a situation where I think Jerry just continues to pile on to the point of agitation, but Dak's going to be Dak. He's dealt with this in college. He's going to deal with it this week, and whatever we see, that's what we got to live with.
I like the approach of it, but I think it's a standard, sensible approach by an owner GM. Whether feelings are – it's business. So feelings don't belong here in this conversation. It's about you being a professional. The job says for you to be as available as you can possibly be. And furthermore, I think he does. I mean, the one thing I'll disagree with within the Whitlock is – I do believe that this game matters. I think the size of this game matters for a lot of different reasons. Even though they can still get into the playoffs and possibly win the NFC East losing this game, I believe, it's a major game because if Prescott does not play, I think there's bigger implications if they have to go into the link, play this Philadelphia Eagles team, who is up for the NFC East as well. There's bigger implications here if Dak doesn't play versus if he does play. Long-term matters, but I think this game truly matters to Jerry as well, and that's why I think he's putting it out there the way that he is.
Well, Dak's going to play. I mean, when has he not played? Mm-hmm. I mean, I think that's the big thing. And as an owner, you know Jerry Jones. Jerry Jones, he don't have to go to the trainer. He makes all the calls. I go straight, hey, Dak. How you feeling, man? How's your shoulder? You know, do you think you're gonna be, what are you gonna be able to do this week? I'm guaranteed he asked that to him straight up because that's the kind of owner Jerry is. Jerry's the general manager and he owns the football team. So he has the right to ask those questions. I feel like, you know, with Dak's play, I think that throwing the football, I've always said this, Cowboys are a run first team. They haven't done it this year, and I think that's the reason they're in this situation. And I think in this football game, even if Dak plays, I think the big thing is they're gonna run the football.
Let me ask you this though, Eric. Marcellus made an interesting point. Should this conversation have been private?
You know what? Think about it. This is Jerry Jones. You know, Jerry Jones doesn't do anything private, really. I mean, I own the Cowboys. You know, yeah. It's like, look at me.
He's being
Jerry. I mean, when have you ever known Jerry to be really private?
Key word was should.
That's true. But, you know,
should it?
I'll say it again. That's Jerry Jones. Mm. You know, but for us, you know, in locker room, stuff is private. If injury reports, I'm like, man, we know what's going on. But for an owner and for him, but Jerry Jones, no.
Yeah, the owner's voice rings loudest. Yeah. And the owner's just come on record and said, no excuses. Now, again, take my high school coach, Lee Dilt. That was a private conversation between me and him. A couple of guys standing around could probably hear him shouting at me, but he didn't go on the loudspeaker and say, hey, look, if Whitlock plays like donkey doo-doo, you know, blah, 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 blah. That's what Jerry has basically done, and it's kind of, I understand why he's done it. They've been in a 4-5-month-long dispute over money. And I don't care how much they like each other. Right. When you argue with somebody over money for that long, eventually feelings get involved and inappropriate things start happening.
Yeah, man. I love the point of how the owner's voice, it echoes. It's louder in volume. When you get your check, there are only two names on it. It's your name and whoever wrote that damn check. And guess what? I'm listening to you. And you're coming at me knowing that I'm compromised, knowing that I'm less than right now, and saying I'm going to perform at top form, top level? Jerry, if you really care about how I'm feeling, and if you really care about how I'm going to deal with this, why would you ever want to create another obstacle or pressure or level of adversity than the one I'm already dealing
with? Let me respond. I believe in this scenario, Jerry, you guys mentioned, do you have this conversation? Should it take place in private? I believe the conversation already took place between Jerry and Dak. Mm.
Why does it need to go farther?
Okay, so here's why I say it goes further. Because Jerry is a showman, he's a salesman, and he's putting it out there to his fan base and to the Dallas Nation that this is something that you guys still need to believe in. This is something you guys still need to be excited about. But I think giving Jerry a little bit more credit than to say he's going to create this situation where Dak is uncomfortable or offended or isn't going to go play well, it benefits Jerry for him to play well. And that makes me believe that he probably had a conversation behind closed doors with him. And once he knew it was okay with what he was saying and the conversation between him and Dak was, he felt more confidence in having that conversation publicly. That's what I would assume a sensible person would do in this circumstance.
I think if any other owner would have said this, it wouldn't be a big deal. But it's Jerry Jones. And Dak's up for a big contract. I mean, think about it. If he said this, I mean, think it. He's going to be a top form. Most owners and
it's
players.
It's tongue in cheek.
It's tongue in cheek. Yeah. It's not a big deal. But
These are things that guys play with and practice with, so I think we're in good shape. I'm not worried about it.
Stop right there. I'm not worried about
but
it.
But he's minimizing something that he's not dealing with. What they always say, there's no such thing as a little surgery, a small surgery, unless it's performed on somebody else. When it's on you, it's always big, brother. And you know, your throwing shoulder. First of all, look at Dak. Let's do an anatomy exercise right now. Dak has a sprained left wrist. He has a fracture, some say, index finger on his throwing hand, and he has an AC joint sprained shoulder. You know what that means? Even in a throw motion, I'm compromised. Even when I try to take a hit and land, I'm compromised. I can't even land on my off wrist. Dak's broke down, and Jerry's trying to minimize this to get leverage in the contract negotiation. To me, that's just
petty.
But
is he minimizing?
Top form?
I don't know that I see it as minimizing.
Top form?
I'm not worried about it.
Dak said, I'm going to be good on Sunday.
And that's what I think.
That's the hope.
I'm going to continue to base this off of the sensibility of saying that Jerry Jones, with as much as he feels is at stake for this season, would be...
This is where we disagree.
Okay, go ahead.
Because this is why I like Jerry's approach, because I think it's realistic. I don't think there's that much at stake this season, and I think Jerry knows it. Mm. Jerry knows that the Saints... the Packers, the 49ers, Seattle, all the Vikings, all them teams are better than them. We're not winning the Super Bowl. Jerry has all, he ain't gonna say it. Mm. And everybody, oh, it would be crazy. He denied onto the hill. Jerry's moved on to next year.
I'm a disagree with you.
And how much money are we gonna have to pay Dak Prescott moving forward?
And the reason why I'm a disagree with you is because I think they had, again, y'all came in here on Monday talking crazy about Dallas. Like, oh, they're back on. They could be a Super Bowl contender
now.
They going to run it out.
Who said that? Not that far.
I heard a whole lot of stuff coming out.
I'll give you a little of that.
I mean, and they had a very impressive showing against the Rams team. They did.
Give them that.
And enough so where people debated where is this team's trajectory now. I don't think he's punted on this season. And I think it's more of a passive-aggressive way of saying, I do not want to try to figure out this game or the next game without having Dak Prescott at quarterback. And as an owner GM, why would I not have that? Like the GOAT said, why not go, hey, Dak, how you feeling? You good? All right. Really? All right. So you think you're going to be at full speed? Jerry. I think he really is trying to use this as a rallying method versus a negotiation tool.
Let's say Jason Garrett would have said this. It would have been a big deal. But I keep saying
But Jason would never say it
But let's just say he did.
He wouldn't definitively say how you're going to perform when compromised.
Well, you know what?
Because his job is on the line.
Right, his job is on the line. I think as a coach and a player, it's a different situation. But as an owner, I say it again. We know how Jerry is. Jerry's about, look at this. All right, now we're talking about this.
Right.
We're talking about this.
But, Edie, you didn't practice all week. You got a hammy, and you're a running back, so you need your hammy like he needs his shoulder. And then the owner comes out and say, oh, Eric going to be at top form. I know that.
I ain't even worried about it.
I can't even walk, bro.
But you know why?
He has not thrown a football since the game.
I told him that.
Hey guys, this is Jason Whitlock from Speak for Yourself. Are you ready for what's ahead? You can't always predict the future, but you can game plan for it. Generations of families and businesses have harnessed the power of Pacific to help them reach their unique goals. Whether you need to save enough money to meet your needs, ensure your family is protected, or make sure you don't run out of money, Pacific Life has a variety of financial solutions that can help. Pacific Life counts more than half of the 100 largest U.S. companies as its clients and has been named one of the 2019 world's most ethical companies by the Ethisphere Institute. Protecting what matters most to people for 150 years and counting, that's the power of Pacific. Ask a financial professional about how Pacific Life can help you game plan for the future or visit PacificLife.com.
Eric Dickerson's back. We're joined now by Fox NFL analyst TJ Hoosman's. Out of time now for a big story. Let's move to New England, where the Patriots host the Bills Saturday in a showdown with huge implications for the AFC playoff picture. Bill Belichick says his team is absolutely treating the matchup like a playoff game, and there's no question the pressure on Tom Brady is amped up, with the GOAT leading one of the Patriots' most anemic offenses in recent memory. All right, yesterday Brady was very brief with the media, only like 2 minutes, 20 seconds.
Gotta get that treatment.
Yeah, well, I think the pressure, is he's starting to feel it.
Oh.
And will that pressure bring out a great performance in the GOAT?
The pressure?
Yeah.
No, that pressure is not going to get to the GOAT, and the GOAT's not sweating this. Remember that guy that was asking you okay, Whitlock? Remember him?
Yeah.
He in high school now. Guess what? He took a field trip. He in Foxborough right now. He going up to Tom Brady. How you feel about the Buffalo Bills? How you feel about the Buffalo Bills? Your offense is anemic. He is agitated. Tom Brady is about to snap because he's tired of asking these questions to journalists and media types who don't have perspective. First thing about sports, it's a relative experience. Wins and losses are based on your opponents, not some standard that you have to live up to, which is the Patriot way in success. It's about this year and your opponents. Here's the numbers. Tom Brady, last year, their scoring offense, 26.7. You know what it is this year? For all those people saying they're anemic offense, 26.6. Whoa. You know what their scoring defense was last year, 22.1. You know what it is this year? 12.9. Perspective. You know what they were going through last year, week 16? Hoping Houston will lose so they could get a bye. You know what they're going through this year, week 16? When? We got our bye. Destiny in our hands. And Bill Belichick, the reason why he's looking forward and saying, let's treat this like a playoff game, is because last year they played their best football in the playoffs. If y'all don't add this up properly, Tom Brady gonna slap somebody because he's tired of answering questions like they have to live to a standard versus just beat up on their opponent.
Before y'all go, I want to just say why I disagree is previously there was – Tom Brady seen Bigfoot twice now. And he's like, he knows Bigfoot's real.
Who's that, Eli?
Lamar Jackson and Patrick Mahomes. There's monsters waiting on the Patriots. Mm. And they're not good enough, and he knows it.
Mm. Bigfoot. Deshaun.
The pressure is not going to bring – the Patriots just don't have it offensively. Now, I agree with you with Tom Brady is not going to feel no pressure. But he knows what he's going to war with. He don't have the players – that can bring it through for him. He knows that. Mm. The reason Bill Belichick is treating it like a playoff game because he knows the Buffalo Bills, if you don't treat it like a playoff game, gonna win that division. Mm-hmm. And they gonna have you on the road the first game. And so you treat it like a playoff game so you can get a first round bye or possibly play at home. You just go back to the first game. They won 16-10. They blocked the punt for a touchdown. Josh Allen threw three interceptions. Are you going to block a punt for a touchdown again? Probably not. You hope Josh Allen doesn't throw three interceptions. The pass rate defense at the Buffalo Bills is third. That's tough treading. Julian Edelman, he's hurt, but he's probably going to play. Mm. Who's going to get open? You're not going to run the ball on the Buffalo Bills. You got to count on the Bills to falter, to give you the ball, to turn the ball over for you to win. You better treat it like a playoff game or you're going to be in the playoffs one game and go home.
What is the pressure on Tom Brady? I think the pressure's on a 42-year-old Tom Brady. 32-year-old Tom Brady, this is no pressure. But it is because now Tom can't make you better. I mean, it was the point where Tom would make his receivers, he'd make guys better around him. Those days have passed. It's like Michael Jordan. Michael Jordan, when he was 23, 24, that was different Michael Jordan when he was 40 playing basketball. It's the same thing with Muhammad Ali, greatest of all. I think he was the greatest. But when Ali was in his 30s, looking at him in his 20s, it's the same thing with Tom Brady here. It's a difference now. He can't make the guys around him better. I feel like with the Bills is they're on the upswing. And if I'm Buffalo, I'm like, we don't have anything to lose anyway. I mean, we're 10-4. We possibly get into, I think they'll make the playoffs, but we're the Bills. People expect us to lose. So I think the pressure is on Tom Brady. But
Buffalo is looking at like, we gave them the first game.
Five turnovers. And that is a mental trap if you think you gave them anything. First of all, we know we've been on the field. You earn everything. Ain't no gifts. Nobody just going to get their punt blocked. You blocked their punt. So here's the thing. The Buffalo Bills are coming. They have $89 million in cap space going forward. Guess what that is? Fourth most in the NFL. That means they're going to keep building this team. And that's why Bill Belichick is like, hey, y'all, handle them this week. And we're going to see him probably again in the playoffs and next year and the year after, year after. Bill Belichick already is playing that psychological game. But stop acting like the Buffalo Bills is going to go out there and just run over or even beat the New England Patriots. Sean McDermott's never beat Tom Brady, Bill Belichick. Josh Allen, 185 yards, 146 yards, 139 yards in three of the last 4 weeks.
But McDermott has done very well against Brady.
Hello?
His defenses.
Scored 17 points last couple outings. 17 points, y'all. Y'all
acting like Marcellus, you're moving the goalposts, though.
Okay.
This is about the pressure on Brady. This is about the pressure on Brady.
Brady knows
and
his
I
numbers.
And I think people think because Brady's the GOAT, he's impervious to pressure. And that's why I think Eric is right. At 30 in his prime, impervious to pressure. 42, after the season he's had, he's clearly feeling the pressure. Now, it's either going to bring out a, oh, my God, he done brought something back from the past, he went back to the future, and we see the... Or I think we're going to see a very mediocre to bad performance from Tom Brady.
No.
And I'm betting on the latter.
No way. First of all, last year to this time, this was a team that end up going 11-5. They already have 11 wins with two games to go. They're going
to
be a better team by the numbers on every of the major categories. Wins, losses, offense scoring, defense scoring. Two, if you look at it.
Tom Brady's numbers ain't better.
No, you're right. And Tom Brady's numbers weren't good in the playoffs last year.
No, they're not better than last year.
And last year, he wasn't that great in the playoffs. And guess what it ended up being? A Super Bowl championship. That's my point. It's a collective effort. And stop using this birth certificate against this dude. He played quarterback. Willock, when you were 20 years old, 364 days in, and then midnight hit.
You know, I thought you was about to say 64 pounds, but go ahead.
It is Friday. I can go there. And then midnight hits, and you're 21. And also, you got all these privileges and liberties you didn't have just a few hours ago. But that number suggests a lot more than how you feel. Tom Brady is like 42. Last year, he won a Super Bowl at 41. And y'all acting like this one year changed the world.
I'm not doubting Brady. I'm doubting the guys around Brady.
Him. That's it.
I'm doubting the guys around Brady. I know Brady can do it.
Did we not
it's
doubt?
It's the guys around
him. Did you doubt Gronkowski last year when he had his worst season, regular season? Didn't we doubt Edelman last year?
Now, we're 42.
Who's going to replace Gronkowski? Come close to that.
Nobody.
That's
we hope.
We hope.
That's the next thing. Think about Rob Gronkowski. He, you know how they say the Patriots don't pay no one? They don't pay anybody.
Yeah.
If Rob Gronkowski would decide to come back, right now, they'd be like, what do you want? Because it shows how much they miss Gronk. Mm. Last year at this time, the Patriots were playing good football.
Last year, they had a horrible game against Buffalo.
They were playing
December. Good. But and they lost two straight. They lost Josh Gordon in suspension.
At the end of the season.
Oh, man. That's what Tom Brady mad at.
At the end of the season.
People forgetting.
See, early in the season, they jumped out. Everybody loved, oh, the Patriots. They look unbeatable. And I said it earlier. I said, when something looks too good, it usually is too good. Mm. I mean, I just don't feel like.
People said that about me my whole life.
Thank you.
Two December losses last year. You said about they played well last year.
This is just not the same team that they were last year.
No, they're better. You're right. They're better.
No, they're not better.
LeVar Arrington and T.J. Houshmandzadeh are back. Let's move to New Orleans, where Drew Brees just set another NFL record, passing Peyton Manning for the most touchdown passes of all time. The record got Brett Favre's attention, with the Hall of Famer saying Brees and Sean Payton are, quote, by far the most prolific duo in NFL history. There are a couple of other dynamic duos who might take issue with Favre's comments. With both Tom Brady and Bill Belichick, that combination, and Joe Montana and Bill Walsh's combination, winning a hell of a lot more Super Bowls than Brees and Peyton, who currently have just one. All right, the question here is, do Brees and Peyton need another Super Bowl to even be in this conversation?
To answer that, yeah, they need that and more probably to be in this conversation. I think Brett Favre is trying to pull a fast one on us, bringing the bar, the ceiling down to where Drew Brees and Sean Payton really are. They're more Mike Holmgren and Brett Favre than anything. You go to a water cooler and talk about Drew Brees, conventional conversation is going to go, he's amazing, great numbers, all that. And then somebody's going to walk up to you and tell you the truth. Hey, I think they kind of underachieved. You got Drew Brees this long with this franchise. Let's not forget that only one Super Bowl. Ooh, I wonder who else only has one Super Bowl was a great duo. Brett Favre. Oh, that's interesting because everybody else we're talking about, we're talking about Tom Brady in six, we're talking about Joe Montana with four, and we're talking about Drew Brees with just one, like a Brett Favre. So What's interesting about Drew Brees and this team, 3-7-9 seasons in a row, it just happened. And then they had another one a couple years before that. So we forget the lulls when we want to talk about all the records. But in combination, they're not in that category. That's tier two.
I don't think you have to have Super Bowls to justify being most prolific. So I'll say no, they don't. I look at the duo of Chuck Knoll and Terry Bradshaw. They got enough Super Bowls together to justify. They're not even on the list that we put up on the graphic, right? Do they equate to being the most prolific duo? Of course not. Barry Sanders, how many Super Bowls does Barry Sanders have? Is he the most prolific runner that this game has ever seen?
Yeah, that's
easily, not even debatable.
Yes, it is, but go ahead.
I don't think it is.
You're sidetracking me.
No, I'm
you're
not trying to make me. I am not trying to move the gold curse on, yeah. Put the gold curse on you. Right? Here's the gold curse. You do not have to be successful in terms of winning the Super Bowl to be considered most prolific. They are prolific. Sean Payton and Drew Brees, with their statistical accomplishments, with what they've been able to do, are super prolific and worth being in the conversation.
Man, I'm with you. To be prolific is to do something that's extraordinary, put up great stats, and that Drew Brees is top four in every statistical category a quarterback can be in. And Brett Favre, he's only in two of those. And one of them is attempts. And so that Drew Brees is up there. And right. It just so happened that him and Sean Payton, they've been together for 13 years. Very rarely do you see a quarterback and coach stay together as long as Belichick and Brady, that they've been together for 20 years. Mm. But what Drew Brees and Sean Payton have done, they've won one Super Bowl. You hope he can get more. But as far as being prolific, that duo, no question there. And you look at it, he hasn't played with the type of players that Joe Montana played with. He ain't had no Jerry Rice.
Oh, Michael Thomas.
Michael Thomas.
Come on. Now, you just said Barry. Now we really.
Michael Thomas right now.
He's on his way to possibly being that, but we don't know. Mm-hmm. He's only in his fourth year.
You got John.
Y'all acting like Marcus Colston wasn't getting it.
No, Marcus Colston.
He wasn't getting it.
Was he Jerry Rice?
Jimmy Graham.
John Taylor? Dwight Clark, Roger Craig. So you got to look at who these guys are playing with.
Oh, they have squad.
And so prolific.
That was before, 100,
he's in a conversation.
Free agency, of course.
I just want to say, do y'all like Herm Edwards or not?
I like him.
You like
Herm? I love Herm.
I learned.
You play to win the game. Why does everybody keep trying to remove the purpose of the game from any of these discussions? You play to win.
They've won a lot of games.
I'm going to tell you why.
No. There's one game that matters more than everything else, and when you start trying to put all time on people, you better bring some Super Bowls to the table. And I think Sean Payton and Drew Brees know this. That's one of the reasons why they're so irate about last year. They do see themselves as a historical combination that was denied last year, a second Super Bowl, and then they could really be in these discussions. They need a second one. I'm not putting these guys on the same level as John Elway and Mike Shanahan. Mm. Y'all don't remember Shanahan was Elway's offensive coordinator in Denver a lot of years with Dan Reeves, and then they won two Super Bowls together. But certainly, Joe Montana and Bill Walsh, get out of here. Tom Brady and Bill Belichick.
So do you just discredit what Drew Brees has done?
I'm not discredit, but he's Don Shula and Dan Marino right now. He's Brett Favre and Mike Holmgren.
I don't have a problem with that.
That's one of the best ever.
Is that the top tier?
That's one of the best ever.
Is
that's
that
tier.
The top tier?
Holmgren and Brett Favre? That's top tier.
No, so
that's
hold
top
on.
Tier.
On the same
top
of the level.
Top, that's
thank
top
you.
Tier.
Is thank you, TJ.
Brady and Belichick. That's the top of the top.
Yeah.
Now,
y'all, are we saying top three? I heard top 10.
We're not talking top 10. That was a previous conversation earlier in the week.
Okay.
Check your CTE at the door.
I'm sorry.
Not right
but
now.
But here we go. They are still considered to be one of the most. You do not think that.
It's a different tier. They're not tiers. There with Brady and Belichick. Montana and Bill Walsh?
I don't buy that.
And look, I'm not usually so simplistic, sometimes lazy with, let me just count the rings. However, when you play the most important position, when the ball's in your hand every single play, TJ, it's not you. LeVar, wasn't you playing linebacker. Nope. It wasn't me, Dean. We could have amazing games and get our butts killed. Quarterbacks, when they have amazing games, there's a correlation to success. And if they don't have the ultimate success to show it and make that on repeat.
The stats
show. Yeah, but then it comes up short for a reason, and that's the difference in tiers.
LeVar, I just can't believe you sound like a fantasy football player.
Oh, come on.
And that's what they've turned all this analysis of football into, fantasy football. And it's like, oh, just look at the stats, and that tells the whole story. Well, I think Jameis Winston or somebody's about to lead the league in passing yards or touchdowns.
Yeah. So Barry Sanders' yards don't mean
anything. Has a Super Bowl.
His yards don't mean anything.
That's a distraction.
No.
And then Barry Sanders into the conversation. That's how? A distraction.
He's the most prolific runner that's ever played this game with no Super Bowls. How is that
a
distraction?
Drew Brees is doing it year after year after year after year after. Like,
thank
it's
you.
It's nonstop.
Yes.
It's nonstop.
With Sean Payton.
Right.
You know what? They set the rules up for it to be that way for quarterbacks, too.
Oh, my God.
The new rules have done that.
Why isn't everybody else doing it?
A lot of people are doing it.
No, everybody else is doing it.
I'm not diminishing Drew Brees' numbers. I'm saying when it's time to split hairs, that ultimate success and that ultimate game matters at that position more than anything else.
Now, like I said,
running backs are not in that conversation.
Brady and Belichick are at the top. They're looking down at everybody else, and I don't believe anybody will come close to them.
That's all I
would
say.
But after that, he has to be in the
conversation. Can we revisit Terry Bradshaw and,
no,
and
we're
Chuck
not.
Noll then?
No, we're not, because I just want to ask you this. Honestly, TJ are going to sit here on national TV and say Joe Montana and Bill Walsh, that Drew Brees and Sean Payton on the same level Joe Montana and Bill Walsh.
Joe Montana played with so many Hall of Fame guys.
TJ, say it with your
same
chest.
Level.
And
same
so,
level.
Say it with your chest.
You're playing with other guys. You tell me one guy that Drew Brees has played with that's going into the Hall of Fame. And I can tell you five that Joe Montana played with. And that makes a difference.
You know why? You know why Joe Montana's guys are? Because they won a bunch of Super Bowls.
Ooh.
And that puts you in the Hall of Fame.
Ooh.
When you only win one, less guys go to the Hall of Fame.
Ooh.
If Drew Brees gets some more Hall of Fames, Cam Hayward, he's going to go. Cam Jordan, I'm sorry, he's going to go.
That's a distraction. The Hall of Fame is a distraction from the conversation of what you're asking.
I'm just amazed Whitlock came with that counterpunch because I was stuck. But the fact that you said it, you have to have that ultimate success. Two things happen. We poach you of your talent. Every team wants that talent. And then everything gets inflated to the Hall of Fame level. Well, that's why Edelman's in the conversation for Hall of Fame, despite not even having numbers.
He's in your conversation.
He's in a conversation. And that's because of the ultimate team success.
No.
I agree, but he's in the conversation. I can't deny that.
They're in the conversation.
I'm
very jealous of Edelman.
If your peers don't ever vote you into a Pro Bowl, how can you go to the Hall of Fame?
Edelman way better than you, TJ. You said it right.
He know he ain't.
Joining us now is Fox Sports NBA analyst Rick Bucher. Time now for Darnell's question of the day. All right, take it away, homeboy.
Yes, sir. Let's move to a huge NBA matchup last night where the Greek Freak and the Bucks took down my Lakers. Giannis had a huge night, scoring 34 points and shocking pretty much everyone with the career-high 5 3-pointers. During the game, Giannis mind putting a crown on his head. And after the game, LeBron was asked about the MVP's big night and pretended to tip his cap. I wanted to ask you guys, you think Giannis took LeBron's crown last night?
No, I don't think you can do that in a regular season game at all. And LeBron's had so many signature postseason moments. And I'm just sorry. My last memory of Giannis in a big game was him getting emasculated by Toronto and that wall they built for him in the postseason. And so until he proves to me he can get past that postseason wall the teams are going to build for him, you can't take LeBron's crown.
Exactly. Regular season, 29th game. Your trophy shelf at home doesn't have a 29th game crown right there. And I'm going to take this from LeBron and put it right here. The only time you could take someone's crown is when they can't come back for that same crown. You got to knock them out, not just knock them down. That's just one game for LeBron. They can bounce back. We know if they see each other when it matters most, it will be the finals. And that will be redemption for the Lakers if that's the reality. But in 29th game, move on.
Nope. So there was another clip where we have Giannis saying that the most important thing is that you stay humble. Did I miss that? And that was after this game, right?
Yeah.
Most important that you stay humble, and yet I'm going to put a crown on my head because on December 19th, in a regular season game, I hit 5 3-pointers. To take a page out of Allen Iverson, not a playoff game, We're not talking playoff game, not a championship game, a regular season game, a regular season game. I'm going to put the crown on my head because I've achieved something. It's official. It's official now. Giannis Antetokounmpo has been fully Americanized because now, now he is claiming things for the most minute achievements. Now, well done.
I'm going to defend him,
man,
in the game, being caught up in the emotions and doing something emotional and, you know, showing a little too much joy and a little too much bravado in the game. After the, I think overall, this dude does try to be humble. I wish he expressed his humility a little bit. Because, you know, yesterday I think he said, I'm not even supposed to be here. Yep. I wasn't the number one pick. But I don't like it when these guys say I'm not supposed to be there. But here's where I'm really going to agree with you, Rick, is that LeBron James thinks what we think. Everybody thinks this hat tip of LeBron was praise. It was really him trolling, like, yeah, let's see him do it again. Tip my hat to him, but we'll live with that. Yeah. If this dude's going to knock down 5 3-pointers and that's how they beat us at home by 7 points, I can live with that. That's, to me, what LeBron was saying. I can live with that.
And, by the way, that's not how they're going to beat them. Like, I don't care if he's hitting 3-pointers from 30 feet. That's not going to win a championship for them. I want to see him be able to operate below the free throw line where he's going to draw attention, because I want Kyle Korver and Pat Connaughton and Chris Middleton hitting threes. If you can hit a three now and then, I'm good. But that's not how Giannis is going to lead this team to a championship any more than LeBron James has led his teams to championship by shooting threes. That's not his role on this team. Everybody lost their minds because he's hitting threes right now.
Yeah.
He's hitting them from 30 feet. What else can you do from 30 feet other than shoot a three? And is he going to do that? He did it last night with 10-point leads. You're going to do that down by two with 8 seconds left? When you start hitting those threes, now I'm buying that you've accomplished something.
You know, it's interesting watching athletes, competitive as all outdoors, compliment each other. And I've learned that there's a psychology at times to that compliment. You pump up something that's beatable, something that you actually like, oh, yeah, let me give you all the props in the world because I know you at full throttle ain't got it.
Right.
Like, when it's really a distance and you're like, oh, I can't do it, I ain't pumping you up. You already are a monster. So I watched LeBron do that. And I was like, oh, LeBron, you already think, oh, we got the DNA of this team. We know how we could get them when it matters most.
LeBron's worried about your guy, not this guy.
Exactly. And it's funny. Clippers, Kawhi, we know how it goes. This takes me to an analogy, an example that Kobe Bryant brought up when everyone was poking at Kobe Bryant saying, you almost were Jordan. You were there, but not exactly. A great facsimile. And Kobe, I remember one time, kind of poked back and said, it's amazing, man. Like, what do I got to do to get the credit? From Harold Miner, to T-Mac, to Shaq, to Duncan, to LeBron, D-Wade. All those guys were the greatest at one time. But you know who was the common through all those? Me. And that's what I think LeBron is just, there's a part of LeBron looking at Giannis like, all right, don't forget. Like, through all this transition and Reggie Miller saying, oh, the torch is passed. Okay, don't forget who's the common denominator.
I think that in that Lakers locker room last night, they were giggling, not so much at Giannis or just in a disrespectful way, but just like giggling, like, dude, I hope this guy falls in love with the three-pointer. I really do.
Sure. Yeah,
I hope he focuses on this the rest of the year, because come the postseason, I don't think in a 7-game series, if we see them in the NBA Finals, he can hit enough three-pointers to beat us. Now, if this guy figures out how to get to the rim and go up against that defensive wall that we're going to have for him and figure out how to make plays in that, then we can be beaten. But in their mind, they're like, man, I got AD waiting for him down here. I got JaVale McGee. I got LeBron.
Dwight.
Dwight Howard, we'll let him shoot those threes if he wants to fall in love with that.
He had a baseline little short corner jumper when the Lakers were trying to make their comeback. That, to me, said more. I said, ooh, if he can repeat that, that's going to be far more vital than hitting threes. And the other part is, you look at the Bucks right now, they played 11 guys last night. 10 of them scored. Like, they're getting it from a variety of places. He only played 32 minutes. When you get to the postseason, it's 7-8 guys. Yeah. It's possession by possession. I give him all the credit in the world. Ben Simmons can't develop a three. This guy can shoot a three. He's put the work in. But in terms of what's going to make them champions, that ain't it.
Joined again by Rick Bucher and LeVar Arrington. Time now for the most fearless discussion of the day. All right, this week, Nike released its latest commercial promoting itself and LeBron James as brands that want to save America with Marxist utopian ideology. The commercial is built on the conceit that up from poverty tale told about so many athletes is a trope we should be trying to end.
Always hear about an athlete's humble beginnings. How they emerge from poverty or tragedy to beat the odds.
Cleveland fighting for a trip to their first finals.
They're supposed to be the stories of determination that capture the American dream.
All along we are, I can hear crying.
They're supposed to be stories that let you know these people are special.
All around me, I can't hear. So what is gonna happen now?
But you know what would be really special? No more humble beginnings.
No more humble beginnings. Who could criticize that goal? Well, anyone with an elementary understanding of society. Humble beginnings is a relative phrase. I thought my upbringing was humble until I moved to Rock Hill, South Carolina, and got a view of American Southern poverty. I thought what I saw in the South was humbling until I was educated about the plight of children in Mexico and across the globe. LeBron and Nike released a commercial that mocks the American dream. LeBron says they're supposed to be stories of determination that capture the American dream. They don't. Michael Orr's story says nothing about America. Allen Iverson's story says nothing. Deshaun Watson's? If you give everybody in America $1 million, all you would do is redefine American humble beginnings. You wouldn't eliminate them. Marxism and its running mate, communism, sell the false premise that you can equalize everyone's starting point and therefore equalize opportunity for success. This has never been accomplished anywhere on the planet in the history of mankind. But that won't stop useful idiots from agreeing to promote the concept in marketing campaigns and newspaper editorials, especially if their business interests are tied to communist China. 2 weeks ago, the New York Times published an editorial stating that resources determine the success of black kids more than family structure. It's one of the dumbest, most evil things I've ever read in an American newspaper. LeBron's new Nike commercial is the New York Times editorial brought to television. No more humble beginnings. Being against that is like being against Santa Claus or cute puppies. Who's against the elimination of humble beginnings? People smart enough not to chase their tails. People smart enough to realize it's a gimmick that keeps the poor poor and focused on a solution they can't control. LeBron needs to tell Nike to put him in multiple commercials promoting the nuclear American family. That's what LeBron truly believes in. That's what dramatically improves the life prospects of kids. And that's the story we're all tired of hearing about black athletes. He didn't know his dad until he was 19. No more athletes without two committed parents. Let's make that commercial. Let's make that goal. If we start there, humble beginnings matter a whole lot less. Because of my two parents, you couldn't pay me to change one thing about my humble beginning. All right, guys, Marcel, let's get us started. Do you like LeBron's new Nike commercial?
I don't. Well-intentioned. It really has me torn because I don't know where it lands in reality. I think it's pandering to a lot of our sensibilities, which are really contradictions in our society, which you just brought up. It's talking about equality. I think at the core of this is an equality conversation. And I think a lot of people have not had the honest conversation of freedom versus equality. I think everyone talks about freedom and equality and their contradictions. Let's talk about it. If you want equality, that means if you have, you're going to give it up. And if you don't have, someone's going to help you out. But in the expression that we just saw from LeBron and his affluence, he wants freedom. LeBron, from a humble beginning, chose freedom. We all choose freedom. We all want to go out there, work hard, do the right things, and maximize what those results are. But then this commercial tells you that, oh, you really are in strive for equality. If that's the case, that means it's time to start cutting at the surface of what LeBron's greatness really is. And that's what's tough for me, because this doesn't land in reality. It is well-intentioned, but it is displaced. It's displaced as a quarterback at 1 o'clock on a kickoff, taking a knee and thinking that's going to have an effect in other parts of this world and in inner cities. It's just displaced. It's pandering at its finest and at its worst. So, no, I didn't like it.
So 92% of what we convey is nonverbal. Your body language, images, your facial expression, your tone of voice. That says more. Only 8% comes from the actual content of what you're saying. I don't know what this commercial is trying to convey, but I can tell you what I took from it, from the images, is that the path to success is watching LeBron James on TV or going to the corner store and buying junk food, or getting lit up on a blacktop by a chunky white kid with a mid-range game. Other than that, I don't, what is, if this is an uplifting, we wanna improve the lives of our youth, where is that message? I saw the idolatry of LeBron, I mean, and watching him, what he did is not replicable by the kids watching. So I'm confused. It's not a shoe commercial for sure, right? It's not a shoe commercial.
But it is.
Okay.
But it is.
It is.
But is it?
So what, tell me what you took the interpretation of where this is coming from and what it ultimately does. But I have no idea what LeBron meant to do with this other than to kind of glorify everything that he's done.
Boom.
I hate to be like the nail in the coffin going fast, but I was confused as well. I agree with what you're saying. You know, when I looked at the commercial and I looked at it and was very careful to go through it because of just the details that may have been lost. But I don't like the commercial because the first thing I came up with was it's a perpetuation of what people place a stigma on what a humble beginning is. Mm. And I find that to be very interesting, because what is truly a humble beginning? By the definition of this commercial, you have to be impoverished. You have to grow up and not have. You're not special. You don't matter. You don't have opportunities. Where I am proud of what I came from. I'm proud of those moments and never thought I wasn't special. And I didn't know that humble beginning made me less special than this person. I'll give you a great story. The Tisch and the Mirror family, owners of the New York Giants, their kids are locker porters during training camp. And you want to know what a locker porter does? He picks up your dirty pen. You know how dirty pens get after practice. Them stinking dirty pens. They pick them up off the ground. They put them in the laundry bin. They clean up the locker. They do all these things. And they're working for somebody that they're going to pay at some point in their life. Mm. They're in service. I would say that is a humble beginning. Mm. So don't take away and minimize what one person's humble beginning is versus somebody else's humble beginning and try to classify it as if their education is different from this person's education because of the socioeconomic status that this kid is growing up in. I thought it was a tremendous miss.
Rick, I think the point of the commercial is to create the image that LeBron is extremely empathetic towards people that are economically disadvantaged. And I think that is commonplace among a great many people in America. A large percentage of people in America are empathetic towards the poor. I think there's disagreement on how we help the poor uplift themselves. There are some, and this is where I think the Nike commercial goes to and why I connected to the New York Times, the government should supply the resources for the people that have less than, and let's remove all humble beginnings because everybody's gonna have a brand new car and a cell phone and three hots in a cot and live in the perfect blah, blah, blah. We're gonna equalize everybody at the bottom. And then there's those of us who's like, well, I'm not sure if that's really a solution, because all you're gonna do is redefine what a humble beginning is, right? Because in all these societies where this is being attempted, in these communist countries and socialist countries, go look at the results. They're not doing better than the system we have here in America. And so I just think it's, and again, a lot of these communist, Marxist theology, whatever, they love to create these false gods and idols for people that stand as great symbols, and the worship of them will make you better. And there'll be some trickle-down effect from worshiping them. And so that's why it is a commercial built around kids idolizing LeBron.
Okay, but that's not what he, I'm sure that's not what he intended.
Exactly.
Right? And that's where, this is what really amazes me. Is,
let me just say this before you go.
Yeah.
I do think LeBron thinks there's value in looking at him as an idol. That's why he did this commercial. If more kids look up to me, and again, this is where I'm against celebrity, and I wish the message were, because there, I don't believe in trickle-down social justice, or if LeBron's treated better, or if he's worshipped, the world's gonna be better. I believe, and I wish, and I think this is what LeBron probably truly believes based on the way he's living his life. Mm. Nothing's better than family. Nothing's better than two committed parents. Those are the primary resources human beings need, two committed parents. What LeBron is giving his kids rather than this commercial and a little feel-good moment.
To bring a little levity, there is one thing greater than having two parents. Two parents to have something, you know what I mean? And that's what we're getting into. I think this commercial tried to land there. We don't even have to look outside our own government to realize what I was talking about earlier, which you just brought up, is really the distinction between freedom and equality kind of runs in party lines, not to get too political up here, but freedom is usually represented by Republican beliefs, and Democrats kind of think and lean with equality. And there you can see the divide. And that's what this commercial is really missing in terms of where do you land? Which side are you really choosing? I don't like the commercial fully because it doesn't highlight the value within. To make anything of any situation, you have to highlight the value within a person. This talks a little more about highlighting what's in your circumstances, what's external. And that's not internal motivation. We talked about it before. Numbers suggest that when you come from a starved environment, you continue to starve. Mm-hmm. So why are you now trying to highlight the environment when it's really the individual? And I think if this commercial would have started with that as its kernel of truth, then I think they would have nailed it. Yep. But instead, they really had a contradiction in visuals, and that's what we're all
needed to be
responded to.
Resources that help you define what your humble beginnings are. That's, to me, how I look at it. Mm. Your humble beginning is an education. And I'll push back a little bit on saying that having two parents that have is more than two parents that don't, because to me, it's all about how you value, what you value. I started off in East Hills Housing Project community in Pittsburgh. And for what it's worth, if the tools that shaped and molded my beginning weren't what they were, I would not be sitting here being able to speak right now. And so with that being said, it's the resources. If you're left to try to interpretate what your environment is, and it is an environment that is lacking, then you ultimately become a product of that environment. But it's still an education in terms of what you can be, what you may not want to be. It's so many different narratives that could come out of that. And I think that that's where the miss is in that. Don't devalue it. Yeah. You know, value it.
To your point, you're talking about the two parent home being a resource. For me, this highlights all of the negative aspects of coming from a humble beginning, as opposed to, look, I'm the first and only person in my family to go to college. I'm amazed that my parents were able to create that opportunity for me. But as if I look, and I dare say all of us look There are people and things that happened, no matter where we came from, that gave us that opportunity and we took advantage of it. Mm-hmm. This doesn't highlight those stepping stones. This highlights, oh, it's too bad that you don't have this or you don't have that, as opposed to look for those things that are going to allow you to elevate your situation. This is all about what's working against
you. Follow me and you can change.
This went even farther. It said eliminate the that existence.
Yes, right. Exactly.
Which is insane in proposition because one, like I said, it can't happen in reality. And two, if you're going to eliminate that, you're going to eliminate so many positive attributes that come even from a negative environment. So the craziest thing about, for me, is I didn't take it like with a racial scope. Thankfully.
Although part of the message is, and you got to be black to be in a humble beginning.
And that's where another miss for me was with this commercial as well.
I sit here and think about some of my fondest memories were in the ghetto. Some of the greatest moments of my life were in the so-called ghetto. So my father built a brand new home in the hood, his business in the hood, his bar, the Masterpiece Lounge in the hood. It's my favorite place on earth. Mm. And so this humble bar, this humble neighborhood. Try again, Nike. Whitlock and Wiley, LeVar Arrington's back with us. Let's return to Philadelphia, where the Eagles host the Cowboys Sunday with their season on the line. According to Fox Bet, Philly is actually a 2.5-point underdog at home, and Carson Wentz is looking to quiet some of his critics with a big win that would put the Eagles in the driver's seat to win the division. All right, the question here is, would Carson Wentz justify his contract with a win on Sunday?
No, not at all. I mean, first of all, that contract, we talk about Carson Wentz, $32 million. And then you're talking about a team that could potentially go 9-7 and limp its way into the playoffs to do what? I think it would actually highlight some of the underachievement based on that number. It will almost be fool's gold to set up this team to say, oh, here we go. We're in the postseason. We're doing something. Oh, that's the reality. And that being highlighted may come back to backfire on Carson Wentz in terms of his status within this organization. So it's a weird thing. We all want to just get into the dance and then figure it out then. But it's interesting if he gets there by a win this Sunday and then all of a sudden has a huge letdown, $32 million is going to get shot at.
They can't lose. So while I'll say no, this game in specifics will not define justification for his contract, it keeps the conversation of justification alive. Mm-hmm. So if they lose, they're going home, essentially. And so this is a very big game, a very big moment. A lot of people hang the success that Philly had on a different guy. But this guy got paid. He was the contract guy, the draft pick. This performance that he puts out there this weekend certainly keeps the conversation alive for Philly fans, for Carson Wentz, maybe even for the team and the ownership to have paid him this money.
As injury riddled as the Eagles are, he's out there playing with table scraps. Mm-hmm. And if he can beat Dallas and put them in control of their destiny and have them win the NFCs, I think going into the offseason, everybody's done talking about Carson Wentz being overpaid.
What's that postseason look like? You saying a one and done?
I don't think he has to do anything in the postseason. Mm. He wins his division with this beat-up team, and he's been the reason why they've done anything. His late-game performances, his working with these three tight ends and no wide receivers. Don't you got to give the man some
credit? Who's the justification for?
The fan base and again, I just don't think if this guy wins this game, it's going to be hard for me to sit here and say, I don't understand why the Eagles
played. Here's where the problem is with that reasoning. Nick Foles set the bar really high for Carson Wentz to gain justification of a high-paid franchise quarterback.
Nick Foles went down to Jacksonville and got exposed.
Nick Foles delivered a Super Bowl trophy in a place that has never
had
one.
With a far more healthy team than what Carson Wentz is working.
But you said the fan base. If it's the fan base and you're saying justification from the front office to justify it to the fan base is sitting there saying Nick Foles got us the Lombardi trophy. That's what a fan is saying. Yeah. So now the bar has been set pretty high for what Carson Wentz has to do in order to justify where he's at.
And you don't want to get the fan base's hopes up. Let me be real about this. I know I've been on some playoff teams and some non-playoff teams. It is more painful for all to lose in the playoffs than to not make it at all. I mean, I've heard 1,000 guys say it. And people don't it's counterintuitive, but think about it. Once you know you're not making it, it's a softer blow versus, oh, because once you get in, everybody thinking, oh, three-game schedule.
We can do
four
it.
Four-game schedule. We can do
we
it.
We can do it.
And you against these NFC no, you teams, they're going to limp into the playoffs and play somebody good. Philly will be cool with it.
And they take that L, and then they be like, we paid him $32 million to do this. And I'm telling you, that drop is greater than not making it at all.
All right, Darnell, is there a Super 6 for the Cowboys-Eagles this weekend?
Yes, sir, there is. And before the games kick off on Sunday, be sure to download the Fox Sports Super 6 app and play for free for your chance to win Terry Bradshaw's $250,000. Mm. Like you just said, Eagles-Cowboys are one of the Super 6 matchups. Let's help our fans with some money. Give us a winner and a score. LaVar, we're going to include you.
Huh? I told you, 21-14, mate.
21-14?
Oh, I told y'all.
Who, Eagles?
Eagles.
All right, I got the Cowboys beating the Eagles 33-26, closer score.
This is a very coin flip game. I think it's going to be a last possession game, whoever has it last. If it's Philadelphia, I think Philly wins by 3 points, 24-21. Uncle Jimmy's here to help us talk about our approval rating for Jerry Jones.
You know.
All right, but first, who's your big dummy of the day?
Woo! Big dummy of the day, go to the person who said to you, you remember when you was 20 years old and 364 days? Marcellus, you know what the hell you wanted to say, man. Go ahead and take that shot, man. Don't be scared of this dude.
I ain't scared to gun it, but that wasn't it.
Man, you had that shot, man.
All right, let's talk to Jerry Jones, whose Cowboys have a huge showdown with the Eagles Sunday. Dak Prescott is going into the game with a shoulder injury, while Jason Garrett has been under fire for weeks.
Yeah.
Marcellus, who do you think Jerry Jones is more concerned about this week?
This week.
Dak or Garrett?
It has to be Dak because he cares about Dak now, these games, and through the postseason. Jason Garrett, he only cares about you in the postseason, and you got to have a hell of a run to keep your job. So it's
Jerry's
Dak.
Already said, Dak, there's nothing to worry about. He's going to be in top four.
Top four.
Yeah.
Man, that's sad. Putting it out there, telling the dude you better be perfect or else.
I don't know. I think that he's perhaps more worried about Jason Garrett because of his ability to do dumb things or just clap on command or whatever the hell. But anyway.
He's affirmative.
All right, Uncle Jimmy, you have any thoughts on Jerry Jones?
So it is written, so it shall be. I like Jerry Jones because he reminds me of me. Jerry Jones is a macho man. He's a man's man. He's a maverick, a trailblazer. He's an astronaut soaring through the sky, man. He's the pumpkin pie at the Christmas dinner. Oh, yeah. Let me tell you something. He is the psycho alpha disco beta bio aqua doop. And you know what that means?
Yeah.
That means that come Sunday night on Abe Lincoln Field in Philadelphia Arena, Jerry Jones and the Macho Madness is going down. You know why? Because Jerry Jones would have it no other way. Oh, yeah. Now, listen here. In your little essay, I want to tell you what you said. What'd you say, man? You called him a businessman. I want to tell you, Jerry Jones is an entertainer. Jerry Jones is what they call an entrepreneur, man. That's what he does.
Entrepreneur.
Ah, let me tell you. He sells tickets. He puts butts in the seats. Oh, yeah, that's what he does. He's always been ahead of his time, man. They told him to sell Coke in the stadium. He said, I'm selling Pepsi. They told him, he said, if you fire Jimmy Johnson, you'll never win another championship. He won one with Barry Switzer, man. I'm gonna tell you something. They told him to pay Dak 40 mil. Jerry Jones ain't no damn fool, man. He knows that paying Dak 40 mil is ill. And you don't throw good money after that, because that's whack, man. Now, let me tell you something. Just comparatively speaking, Mr. Whitlock, the Eagles don't have a chance in hell. It's written in the stars. Ezekiel Elijah and Dakota Rain, They'll be amongst the moon, the stars, and the quasars because they're destined for greatness. Oh, yeah. I'll tell you one more thing, Hip-Lock. Don't you worry your little chubby head about Dakota's shoulder, his arm, his finger, or his pelvises, you understand me? Jerry will exorcise those demons from you and when the time comes, and the Dallas Cowboys, they'll be just fine, man. Oh, yeah. What are you gonna do, big boy? What are you gonna do? It's the Macho Madness and Jerry Jones. We're coming all over you. Speak to me freely, beefy boy.
Hell no. Oh, goodness. It is
no time to think about it. I don't want to think about it. Let's get it done, son.
Man, come stop. On.
My approval rating for Jerry Jones is 74. I got him at all-star status. Ooh. Uncle Jimmy, we need a conversation after the show.
Oh, you think?
I got some things to explain. <You think?
laughs> Oh, my God. I had to drop Jerry, man, putting that pressure on Dak, whatever you want to call it, telling him how he is going to play instead of just trusting in him and his preparation.
All right. The internet, all right. Way too hard on Jerry, have him at a dumpster fire. I don't get it.